So we're going to look at this Mishnah on Daf Chafem and Aleph on top, which continues the topic of Harchakas Nezikin, which means that I can't do even in my own backyard, and certainly out in public, what might have a detrimental effect on others. Until now, we've been focusing our attention mostly on damaging individuals, perhaps those who pass by, but now the Mishnah turns our attention to damaging the city at large, and particularly from the perspective of a foul odor. So the Mishnah says, Marchikim esha nevelos, v'esha kvaros, v'esha bursiki, we'll explain each one of these, min ha'ir, chamishim ama. Now, these three have in common that they all produce a bad odor, and one is nevela, that means carcasses. So people who deal with nevelos, they have to be marked, they have to make sure that there's at least a 50 amma distance between where they're working with these carcasses and the city. You know that the Baal HaTurim, Rav Yaakov Baal HaTurim on the Torah, likes to give Ramazim, he likes to find allusions in the Torah to the law in the Torah Shebaal Peh. And in the Torah it says, Ubasar basada treifalo tochelu lakelev tashlichun oso. And in truth it could have said, lakelev tashlichu oso. What's tashlichun with the extra nun? So he claims that the extra nun is an allusion, it's a hint to the number 50, the 50 amma that you have to be marchik from the dead carcass to the city. Now, in the case of bursiki, which we're going to have a long discussion about, the bursiki is the tanner of hides, and it gives off an odor. And the Rishonim point out that if the tanner is selling his wares within the city, his goods, his merchandise, that's fine. The problem is the actual tanning, what's called the ibud ha'oros, because at that point in time it produces a very foul odor. As far as a ben mavli, means somebody who makes a living out of selling hides that were tanned within a mavli, within a close proximity, a residential area, so he's allowed to do so. He's allowed to live in that mavli. He's allowed to reside there. The Braisa way back on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, we saw this once upon a time, tells us that the Bnei Mavui, those who live in that residential area, have a right to force each other, means to press for an injunction to make sure that there's no bursiki between them, living amongst them, but only because of what we call tacharut, only because of competition, meaning there's already someone selling those very same wares, the same merchandise locally in that mavui, and therefore the Bnei Mavui have a right to say you can't open up a competing borsiki to sell your tanned hides. But the reason why the Bryce has to mention that they could block the entry of a borsiki, the establishment of borsiki in the mavui, because of because of competition, implying that if there's no bursiki already there, he's not competing with anyone who would be permissible. That's because he's only selling his merchandise. He's not taking the hides and tanning them, what's called the ibud oros, as we mentioned before, because the ibud oros, not only does it have to stay out of the mavui, it has to stay out of the entire city, at least at a distance of 50 amma. The Mishnah now quotes a machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Akiva regarding which side of the city, whether it's north, south, east, or west, the Mishnah, the Harchaka required in our Mishnah applies. According to the Tanakhama, Ein Osim Bursiki, the word Bursiki here is just indicative of the entire group that's mentioned here. El Mizrach Ha'ir. In other words, in three out of four directions, the city has a right to block a person from setting up his nevelos, his kvaros, his bursiki, but one direction is okay, and that's the east. To the east of the city, it's okay, because there the wind blows what we call benachas. And if you take a look at Rashi, I think Rashi points this out. Yeah, Rashi, three lines down from the top of your page, says she'ein ruach mizrachis kosher. The ruach mizrachis, the ruach coming on the eastern side, is not a strong wind that would carry this odor into the city. And then we have a little gimel there which tells you to look in the Bach Tamid. He changes Tadir to Tamid. I don't see any radical difference in the truth, but anyway, there's no constant strong wind from the eastern side, and therefore usually it's a warm wind that blows very calmly and gently. And Rashi invokes a pasuk here in Yonah to prove his point. So in any event, from the eastern side, according to Tanakama, you're permitted to set up these three kinds of occupations, even though it generates a certain smell, but that odor will not be carried into the city. That's according to the Tanakama. And we'll soon see that Rabbi Akiva turns it the exact reverse. He's going to say that, on the contrary, there's only one of four sides where there's a strong wind. That's going to be on the western side, the Mairov. And on the other three sides, you would be certainly permitted to set up your bursiki. In other words, according to Tanakama, there's a special leniency in one of the four directions. That's in the Mizrach, and only in the Mizrach. So the Tanakama is being very strict about the law of the Mishnah and its application. Rabbi Akiva, on the contrary, is more makil, he's more lenient. He's only going to prohibit you and require hachaka on the western side. But let's get back to the Tanakama for a moment before we go on to Rabbi Akiva. As we mentioned, Rashi says that on the eastern side, the wind is not going to bring this foul odor into the city. However, take a look, please note Tosfos, the second Tosfos on the page, Dibra Maskel Ein Osin Bursiki, and Tosfos has, again, the conclusion is identical, but for the opposite reason. Tosfos has a sugyan brachos. He claims that what's going on the eastern side is that there's a very strong wind coming from the west, and that blows the air on the eastern side of the city. It blows it away from the city. So again, whereas Rashi says that it's not the counter power of the western wind that neutralizes the east, but rather that the eastern wind per se is a very weak one and it doesn't carry the odor. Tosfos, on the other hand, says that the eastern wind is like all the other sides, all the other directions, just that in this case, the western wind, which we're going to see in Rabbi Akiva down the line, is a very strong wind, a very powerful one, and therefore anything coming from the east will be carried in the opposite direction by the western wind. The Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos explains that both reasons are true, and we should combine. Again, he doesn't mention Rashi and Tosfos, but he says that the Rambam points out that this Mishnah is addressing Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, that area of the world, and they are located towards the west of the globe, I guess. He calls it Mairav HaYishuv in the Rambam's language. He says, on the one hand, the eastern wind on that western part of the hemisphere of the earth is hardly noticeable. It's a very weak wind. And furthermore, he says that the Ruach Mizrachis, the eastern wind, Yesh Bekocha L'Sakein Es HaReach HaRa HaNigram Al Yedea Bursiki. He says that there's some sort of a pleasant odor, if you will, some sort of neutralizing element in the eastern wind that let's call it neutralizes or detonates the foul odor of the Borsuki on the eastern side. So basically, if you take the Rambam, we have sort of three, after Rashi and Tosafot, we have three different interpretations of why the leniency on the eastern side, according to the Tanakhama. One is Rashi Shita, that the wind is not powerful enough to blow the air, the odor. Tosafot, the wind itself could blow, but there's a counterbalancing, very strong western wind. And finally, the Rambam Shita, that on the eastern side, we have a very weak wind, and whatever wind we have, although it's quite rare that that wind would have any significant impact, when it does, the wind is able to be mitaken, says the Rambam, to sort of rectify or counterbalance the reach ra, which is caused by the Borsuki.
In fact, in Israel, is the prevailing wind from the west, from the Mediterranean?
I would assume so. I have to double check that, but it makes sense. Let's just point out here that there is a difference of opinion about the following. We said that according to the Tanakhama, the only side that's permissible is the east. The other three sides are excluded, are prohibited by virtue of this takana of harchaka. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean, and this is the way the Tiferes Yisrael on the Mishnayos understands the Tanakhama, that on the other three sides, it's an absolute, unconditional prohibition to set up the Borsuki on any of the three sides of the city, with the exception of the east, as we said, Tanakhama? And it means that even if you were to be marking more than 50 amma, right, we see that the Mishnah says, Marchikim es anevelos, es akvaros, es abursaki, minair chamishim ama. Well, according to the Tanakhama, what that means is that on the, he says, let me read to you the language of the Tiferes Yisrael. I don't think you have it, unless you have Mishnayos Babasra, but he says the following. He says, in the situation of ir hasmucha lechaverta mitzad mizrach, let's say you have two cities, and now we're going to focus on one city that's near another city, and it's on its eastern side, right? So you have the two cities with one city on the east. He says, ein li yoshvei ha'ir ha'maravis, those who are on the west of the city are not allowed lasos bursuki lemizrach iram. They cannot set up a bursuki on the eastern side of their city, because that east, even though it's permissible as far as their city is concerned, but it's the western side of the nearby city. So he says, afshalo yagia hareach l'toch ha'ir miachash haruach ha'maravis tavias haruach l'ir asmucha. So if you have two cities that are proximate to each other, you're going to have a problem here, that even if you want to avail yourself of the permissible eastern side of the city, if that is now the western side of the next city over, it's going to be prohibited. And we said that in this case, the other sides, including the west, are forbidden even if he sets it up a distance of 50 amma. It's an absolute prohibition.
So was the 50 amma the minimum distance on the east, or the
right?
Is it on the east it could be zero, and on the other three it's 50?
You get the impression the following, that on the other three sides, it's completely forbidden under all circumstances. On the eastern side, it's absolutely permissible, even as close to the city as possible. But all this will become clearer in a minute when we get to Rabbi Akiva. So let's see Rabbi Akiva, and then we'll come back to the Tanakhama Bli Nedar. Rabbi Akiva Omer, L'chol Ruach Hu Oseh. According to Rabbi Akiva, and we're going to have to see what Rabbi Akiva has in mind here, the Gemara is going to vacillate back and forth, it's permissible to set up your bursa key on any of the three sides. As we said before, Rabbi Akiva is the Mekil, Chutz Nimarava, except for the western side, to the west of the city, and that's where it's prohibited. Again, does it mean it's prohibited less than 50 Amma or even beyond 50 Amma? That you'll have to hold your breath until we get to the Gemara. And then the Mishnah says, Umarchik Chamishim Amma. Okay, we don't know exactly what that means. Is he saying that in the other, let's say the east, north, and southeast, all he needs is that distance of 50 Amma, which in the case of the west is not acceptable, because in the case of the west, even beyond 50 Amma, or does this Marchik Chamishim Amma refer to the west, and in the other three cases, there's no minimum at all? And I'm just sort of giving you a preview of coming attractions. The Gemara is going to vacillate back and forth, and then we'll have to go back to the Chachamim once we come to a conclusion about Rabbi Akiva. So again, just in a general sense, we don't know the specifics yet, but Rabbi Akiva is lenient on three out of four sides. The exception is the western side. We have to understand why Rabbi Akiva is lenient on the west. The Gemara is going to go through a whole long discussion about the western wind.
You mean he's rigid on the west?
Right, why is he... what did I say? I said he permits? I meant to say, why is he prohibitive on the west? What is so powerful about the western wind? And that we'll have to see a whole long discussion in the Gemara. And then finally, the Gemara is going to, as we said before, focus on these last words of Rabbi Akiva, Marchik Chamishim Amma, whether or not that last piece of three words refers to the Ovid Stadim, or it's referring to the western side. Now, the remaining part of this Mishnah is not for us tonight. We're just going to remind ourselves of something that we've learned in the past. The Gemara, way back when, on Daf Yud Ches, had a long, long discussion about this Gemara. We'll just refresh our memories by touching on it. Marchikim Es HaMishra. You may remember that they used to soak their flax in a kind of a pool, and that too created a kind of foul odor. And that's how they washed their flax cloth. Not only that, but the particular vegetable, or vegetables in general, I should say, are very sensitive and very vulnerable to the smell that comes from the Mishra, and therefore Marchikim Es HaMishra Min HaYerek. So if you want to set up your Mishra within close proximity, we're not sure of the shear yet, of my Yerek, it means I have a garden, a vegetable garden, which I've planted, and I have, you know, I intend to grow vegetables and enjoy the benefits. So you, my neighbor, are not allowed to come close to my vegetable garden, even though it's on your side of the border, and set up your mishra to soak your flax in this mishra. And the reason for that is, as we said before, because you're damaging my vegetable garden. And so too, Es HaKrishim Min HaBitzolin. You cannot plant krishim, which is some sort of a leek. In Hebrew, it's called a krasi. You may remember it from Leil Rosh Hashanah, if you're into the simanim.
Leek, L-E-E-K?
L-E-E-K. Is Ralph here tonight?
Not here.
Hi, Ralph. What do you have for krishim? I thought it was a leek, but...
Rabbi Oshkol is not with me.
Oh, he's not here tonight. Okay. So you'll have to rely on, instead of Dr. A, Dr. B over here.
I could go, you know what, it's in my office.
No, it's not critical. It's really, I'm reading this part of the Mishnah just for the sake of completing the Mishnah. This is not our sugya for tonight. In any event, the Krishim damage onions, so if Reuven wants to plant his crazy next close proximity to Shimon's onion patch, that's not a good idea. And so too, chardol minadvorim. That means if you're planting mustard seeds, that's not very good for my beehive next door. And the reason for that is because, as a result, my dvorim will get very thirsty and then consume the honey that they're producing, which I want to produce and market. Rabbi Yossi Matir Bechardol. Rabbi Yossi, you may recall, is the one who is lenient with regard to the mustard seeds, and he allows you to plant your mustard seeds in close proximity to your neighbor's beehive. Now, let's just mention the following problem before we jump into the Gemara. There is a bit of an issue here, because you'll notice that if you divide the Mishnah into two parts, there's a striking difference between the first and the second, even though they both address the issue of Harchaka. Whereas in the first, the shear of Harchaka, of Chamishim Amah, is explicit. And truth be told, the Mishnayos all through Perek Lo Yachpar have been very outspoken, pinpointing exactly what the distance of Harchaka is. You can't just tell me, in a general sense, be marchik. You have to tell me how much. But in the second part of the Mishnah, with regard to marchikim, esa mishra, esa krishim, esa chardol, there's something blatantly missing from the Mishnah. The Mishnah doesn't even hint, give us a clue as to how much you have to be marchik. And the Ramban, here in Chidushi HaRamban, is absolutely bewildered by it. His language is tamhini lamalo pirish kamahi elashonu marchikim osa elashonu bekula bekula masdisen archaka stam chutz mizu. We don't find in any Mishnah a general archaka except for this one. And the Ramban did more research. Lo matzasi lo betosefta velo biyushalmi kamahi. He looked all over and he didn't find the source to define the shear of Harchaka.
You say it's Rochuch Bapavation?
So, I don't know, Ralph, if the Ramban is going to go that far, but listen what he does say. He says that with regard to Chardol, there is a shear mentioned, not in our Mishnah, but in the Brisa Tosefta, of 50 Amma. And we now have solved one of the three riddles, namely chardol. We still have to address mishra and krishim. And here the Ramban comes up with a very interesting chidush. He quotes a Gemara above with regard to nivreches hakovsim. You may remember that there's a certain laundry pit where they soaked the clothes with very heavy laundry detergents, you know, chemical substances. And there the Gemara is outspoken that with regard to Nivrechas HaKovsin, the shear of Harchaka to someone else's bar is 4 amos. And therefore the Ramban concludes, which is a very interesting analogy, I don't know, you know, only the Ramban can get away with this. If I said it to you, you would laugh me out. But the Ramban concludes that when it says here in our Mishnah, Marchikim es HaMishra, Minayerek, the Mishnah didn't even bother mentioning, specifying the Shir of Harchaka, because it's identical to Nivreches HaKovsim. The Ramban seems to be oblivious to the obvious distinctions between the two. Nivreches HaKovsim has certain very powerful detergents, whereas Mishra was just used to soak the Pishtan, and the issue here is not some sort of erosive, acidic chemical substance, but rather an odor, and maybe the odor travels further. Not only that, the Mishnah is referring to a Yerek, whereas the case of Nivreches HaKovsim, if you want to double check me, take a look at Daf Yudches, I'm pretty sure you'll find that that's referring to a bar. In the case of Krishim Min HaBetzolim, the Ramban equates it to a different sugya of Archaka. It's one that we skipped, and that's the sugya of Kilayim that requires a Archaka, again, of four Amos, so that there shouldn't be any Kilayim problem, because the shear of four Amos is always the standard shear to avoid any Iser Kilayim. And then the Ramban, you know, the finale of this whole presentation says, Ramban, I don't understand. The Mishnah combines three cases, the last of which requires Archak of 50 Amma, the first two of which require Archak of 4 Amma. That's a major difference. And we don't find in Mishnayis that the style and the literary approach of the Mishnah is to formulate one Halach in three cases with such fundamental differences between the two. And the Mishnah doesn't as much as whisper about these differences.
And another difference is that the beginning of the Mishnah deals with different directions having different parameters. And it may not be entirely clear what we want to do with it, but there are differences, definitely.
Right.
The last part doesn't say anything about, you know, if you're upwind or downwind, or I mean, maybe in the case of the bees, you know, you want it, doesn't matter
right.
What direction, because the bees would fly over. But in terms of the other things, if the soaking of the linen is problematic in terms of odor, if you're downwind, it doesn't matter. If you're upwind, it would. So to that extent, one should.
Could be you're right, Lawrence. I just want to add two small points here. The Ramban tries to justify Rav Yehuda HaNasi in the Mishnah a little bit by saying the following, that the last words of the Mishnah present the Shita of Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi denies the din of Archaka. You know, in all these cases, at the end of the Mishnah, Rav Yossi tilts the burden of Archaka to the Nizak. You know, if you've got a problem because of your Yerek, because of your Betzolim, because of your Dvorim, you solve the problem. Now, says the Ramban, it happens to be that we paskin like Rav Yossi, so that Rebbe did not feel compelled to get into the nitty-gritty details about Archak and the Shirim Archak and the Reisha of the Sefer, because it's not relevant. It's what you call academic. Again, that has to be studied very carefully from a stylistic approach to all Mishnayos. Is it true that Rebbe is influenced by the fact that we pask in one way and not the other way, and therefore the other way is academic? I don't know. So you'll have to study Shas and figure that out. And then the Ramban makes another point. He says it's possible that in all these cases, the Archak is 50 Amma, in which case the last part of the Mishnah is simply an extension of the Reisha of the Mishnah, the case of Nevelos, of Kvaros, and Bursaki. And
Ralph,
yeah, I didn't hear you, Ralph.
I said the point that Ralph made before.
Right, that it comes down to 50 Amma is an extension of the Reisha. Now, if he's talking about Mishra, then I grant you that I'm very much on the Ramban's page, because the issue here with Mishra is identical to the issue of Bursaki, etc., namely Reach Ra, and therefore it makes sense that Rav Yehuda HaNasi expected us to understand that whenever Reach Ra is the motivating issue, then we require a 50 Amma Harchaka. However, when we get to the cases of Krishim, and certainly the case of Chardol, you know, we're not talking about Reach Ra. You know, you could talk about, you know, how far do the bees, you know, travel in order to eat the attractive Chardol. Fine, it might turn out to be 50 Amma, but it would have been nice had Rav Yehuda HaNasi clued us into this. The Rashba, in fact, paskins unequivocally that in all three cases of the Sefer, the Shir HaChaka is Chamishim Amma. He wants to explain the Rif according to that Shita. And then he really pulls a fast one on us. And he says the following. Even according to Rabbi Yossi, who holds that you don't need a Shir of 50 Amma of HaChaka, nevertheless, you do need a certain amount of HaChaka. And the Shir of HaChaka, according to Rabbi Yossi, is 3 Tfachim. Now this is fascinating, because now we have 2 Chidushim. One Chidush we've already seen in the Ramban, who is the Rashba's Rebbe, namely that the Sefer of the Mishnah is an extension of the Reish, and the Shir is 50 Amma. But, you know, that I can live with. Now he has another Chidush, that when Rabbi Yossi is Matir, he means that he's Matir as far as this, you know, sort of like standard HaChaka, which is based on odor and so forth, 50 Amma, but he certainly agrees that you need a minimum HaChaka. Now, we have to ask 2 questions. First of all, why would Rabbi Yossi require a minimum HaChaka? Bad enough to Rabbi Yudan Ossi left it out of the Mishnah, but why logically would Rabbi Yossi agree to some minimum HaChaka? That's number one. And number two, where does the number 3 Tfachim come from? Yeah, that's like a...
That's a half a number.
Right, that's like 1% of what the Rabbanan is saying. But nevertheless, you know, you've got to tell me why the hatchet fell at 3 Tfachim. So, although the Rashba doesn't address the first question I asked you, how do you know that Rabbi Yossi would agree that you have to have a minimum Archaka? He does address the second question, where he comes up with 3 Tfachim. So I'm going to just present to you what I understand for the Rashba. Again, this is a simplification of the Rashba. The Rashba is very lumdish. You have to really learn it thoroughly. And basically what he's saying is that we've had the principle over and over again, just to remind you, of Moder Rabbi Yossi Begirei Dile. We had it, for example, back on Daf Chaf. Where is it? Here we have it, for example, on Chaf Hei Amid Beis. If you jump ahead, don't lose the place on Chaf Hei Amid Aleph. And you'll see it 4 lines up from the bottom of the page. Modi Rabbi Yossi Begiri Didei. And then you'll see it earlier in the Perek on Daf Chaf Beis Amid Beis. And there, again, 4 lines up from the bottom of the page. Modi Rabbi Yossi Begiri Didei. Now, let me just say a word, and that's why I tell you this Rashba has to be taken under advisement, because Moder Rabbi Yossi Begiri Dilei defines a certain kind of Harchaka. What I mean to say is, it's usually either black or white. It's either yay or nay. You know, either it's Giri Dilei and it requires Harchaka even according to Rabbi Yossi, or it's not Giri Dilei and Rabbi Yossi denies the requirement of Harchaka. The Rashba is saying that in our cases, in our Mishnah, the Sefer of our Mishnah here on Chav Dalid, it's the same exact Hezek is both Giri Dilei and non-Giri Dilei at the same time. Meaning that if you get too close, for example, let's take the case of the Mishra. If you set up your Mishra in a very close proximity to your neighbor's bar, then you're going to have to your neighbor's Yerek, my mistake, then you're going to have Giri Dilei. Once you're marking that minimum shear, which the Rashba reveals to us is 3 Tfachim, then it's no longer Giri Dilei, it fits into the standard or the definition of Harchaka according to the Chachamim of Rabbi Yossi, but Rabbi Yossi denies it because it's Lav Giri Dilei. So again, the Chiddush of this Rashba is we can take one single Heze and split it into Giri Dilei and non-Giri Dilei. That's not something that we've encountered until this point. The classical Giri Dilei, which literally means sending arrows from your rishus, from your backyard into your neighbor's backyard, that reflects on the nature of that particular hezek. I'll give you 2 examples. The Gemara says that if you shake something up such that it'll impact on the ground and the ground starts shaking, let's say you bang something, the Gemara talks about running a mill or digging a bar, different cases where you actually create like a mini earthquake. Now it's not a good time to talk about earthquakes because people are really suffering from earthquakes around the world. But you create a kind of a mini shakeup, and that's called giri delay, and therefore you're not allowed to do it. Period. There's no shir of hakaka. You just can't do that. Or, for example,
presumably, if you're far enough away, you won't notice the effect.
Correct.
I mean, I was thinking of, let's say, a pile driver.
Right.
And if you're near it, there's a vibration that would be observable.
Correct.
And miles away, you won't notice it.
Okay, that's a good point.
It's not 50 omelet, but it's some number.
Right. So that, I think that's the logic here of the Rashba. Now, where does he get three tefachim from to set up giri delay? So he says that goes back to the Gemara of Nevreches HaKovsin that we discussed again on Yud Ches. And since the three tefachim minimum is something that even Rabbi Yossi subscribes to, therefore we're going to plug that in over here. Okay, now we get back to the Reish of Abishim because that's really the focal point of our discussion tonight, and the Gemara is going to zoom in on Rabbi Akiva. Remember that Rabbi Akiva is permissible regarding the Bursaki outside the city, everywhere but on the western side. And now the Gemara questions what Rabbi Akiva really means. Iboilehu, which means the Gemara has a suffix. Rabbi Akiva, Heichi Ka'amar. What is Rabbi Akiva saying? What was his intention? And here the Gemara is going to have one side with an Odilma, and after the Odilma, the second side. So the first possibility is the following. L'chol ruachu osa v'somech. That means there's no requirement of archok at all. Chutz mimarov, with the exception of the western side, demarchik chamishim ama v'yosa. So then, Rabbi Akiva is really, really mekil. He has no, he has a zero requirement of harchoka on any side. And not only that, with regard to the western side, it's not an absolute prohibition, but rather a requirement of 50 amma. Once he's marked 50 amma, he's okay. So that's going to be the first side of the Gemara, and that's mekil. However, we're going to take a look at the second side. And apparently the Gemara is going to accept this second side, so we got to really, perk up our ears here. Oh, Dilma, he says, perhaps Rabbi Akiva is saying something else. L'chol ruachu osa marchik hamishim amma. The shear of 50 amma, which has been established already before Rabbi Akiva came to the scene, is applicable in three out of the four sides. That means north, east, and south. Chutz mimarov, the eno osa klal, which means that even if he goes beyond the 50 amma, then it's still prohibited. And here, there's a very important point to clarify this Gemara in the Rashash. You know that the Rashash is published in the back of the Gemaras, and the Rashash says the following. I'm going to read it. I read you the text and then try to understand what he says. He says, L'chora, why is the Gemara raising this issue only within the context of Rabbi Akiva? It's applicable to the Chachamim and the Tanakhama as well. The Tanakhama said, quote, Ein osin bursaki ela lemizrach ha'ir. And once again, we could raise the following question. Did the Tanakhama mean that only in the case of the eastern side, Ein lasos bursaki ela b'tzad mizrach im eino marchik klal? So you remember that the Tanakhama was prohibitive on three out of four sides, except for mizrach. So we could suggest, this would be one possible interpretation, we touched on this earlier, that on the eastern side, he doesn't require any archaka. On the other three sides, he requires 50 am archaka. What does Rabbi Akiva mean? No. That on the eastern side, he needs archaka 50 amma. And with regard to the other tzadim, You don't need. You're not allowed to set up your bursa key even if you are marchik more than 50 achma. In other words, just to summarize, the Rosh Hash is confused as to why the Gemara skips Rabbi Akiva, skips the Tanakhama, jumps right over to Rabbi Akiva. The identical question can be raised within the context of the Tanakhama. Just like you want to know in Rabbi Akiva, who is lenient in the cases of 3 out of 4 directions, with the exception of Marav, you don't know if that means that with regard to 3 out of 4 directions, you don't need any archak at all. In the case of Marav, you need archak of 50 amma. Or does Rabbi Akiva have in mind that in 3 out of 4, you need archak of 50, and in the case of Marav, no archak will suffice? The same identical vacillation applies within the context of the Tanakhama. Namely, when the Tanakhama said that only in the east is it permissible, does he mean that in the east you don't need any archak, whereas the other three you need 50 but not more? Or is he saying that with regard to the east, 50 is enough, with regard to the other three directions, no amount of archak is sufficient?
I have a question just on 50 amah. You can manage that, but if you want to take the approach of on the west side, there's no distance which makes it okay. Do we really mean like 1 million amot isn't enough? 10 million amot isn't enough? And any location that you pick, any city that you pick, and if you say to the west you can't have, well, there must be some community that's east of anywhere you want to pick if you want to go far enough.
Right.
And that would mean that you can do it at all. So that doesn't seem like it's a practical use, and I don't know if that would.
Right. So, Lawrence, I guess we'll have to be patient and see how the sugya unfolds. But your question is excellent. I mean, are we telling you that it's endless? You know, when it says Ein Osa Klal, I mean, how far is Ein Osa Klal? If it's endless, like you say, there's going to be some city there that's going to be affected. So we want to know what the shear is beyond Chamishim Amot.
When you spoke of the example of the two cities, one to the east of the other, and what do you do with the space in between them? We dealt with that a little while ago. But if you make the cities far enough apart, you know, but one is east of the other, this sheer question would definitely, how you interpret it,
right,
would definitely be involved.
So let's see if we can get some clarity on this. First of all, Toshma. Disanya, Rabbi Akiva, and we have a brisa to clarify Rabbi Akiva. L'chol ruach u'oseh u'marchik chamishim ama. Interesting. Rabbi Akiva is not such a mekil. He's not saying that 0 harchaka is required in 3 out of 4, but rather he's saying that in each of the three cases, that means north, east, and south, we require 50 amma and only 50 amma. Chutz mi marava, with the exception of the west, the eino osa kol ikar. So before we see the Bryce's explanation as to why this is so, let's just take a step back and see that the Bryce explicitly spells out Rabbi Akiva to the T. And this is, which side in the Gemara's Iboilu is this? The first or the second? Is it Lekula or Lechumra?
This is
Chumra. This is Lechumra. This is the second side. Am I correct? Let's just go back. Odilma Lechol Ruachu Osu Marchi. Correct. It's the second side. So this is a Chumra. And we're going to have to see how this sizes up to the Chachamim. Now, why is the Chumra so intense on the western side, to the extent in which the 50 amar chaka of all the other tzadim is not sufficient? And the Gemara's language is mipnei shehi tadira. And the Gemara is going to try to understand what that means very shortly. Literally, it translates tadira means it's a constant wind. Okay, omalei raveler of Nachman mai tadira. What does Rabbi Akiva have in mind when he says that on the western side we have a problem of a ruach tedira. Ilema, if you mean to say tedira biruchos, then it means there's a constant wind on the western side.
Prevailing wind.
A prevailing wind, excellent. That means that the implication is that on the other three directions, the other three tzadim, it's not a prevailing wind. So the Gemara says that's simply not true. V'omar Rav Chanan bar Abba Marav, arba ruchos, on all four directions of the world, menashvos b'chol yom. Do you have the words b'chol yom? So Rashi in Masechta Brachos elaborates, based on the Gemara there, that there are 24 hours in a day. There are four directions. Each one of the directions is dominant. The wind is dominant in that direction during a six-hour period. Then he goes through the entire day of 24 hours. So you've got the first 6 hours of the day, the wind comes from the east, and then you have the second 6 hours from the south, and then when you get to the nighttime, it comes from the west, and until Chatzos, till the middle of the night, then it comes from the north. But
I don't think the meteorologists would go along with that one.
Right. All right. We'll have to research that. But be that as it may, Rav, in the Gemara in Brachos, spells out why it has to be so. He says, V'ruach tzfonis im kulon. The northern wind plays a role, a contributory role, with respect to all the other three directions, all the other three winds. She'el mole kein, if not for that, eina olam iskayim afilu sha'achas. In other words, the winds are so powerful that left to themselves, they would destroy the world. We need what's called a northern wind, which somehow rectifies or softens the powerful winds coming from the south, the east, and the west. In fact, if you take a look at Rashi, do you see the word ruach tzfonis? Rashi says, Lefishi Raka, the northern wind is soft. Umituka. Now, I don't know what that means. Literally, it means sweet. Utslula, it's a clear wind. And then he quotes a terminology that he borrows from Masechta Yevamos. Umimatkison. Limatek is a word that's used by Chazal when you have something that's too powerful, that it's overwhelming. It's not to be, it cannot be tolerated. Meaning, it's we can't stand up against it. It's, and that's called mituk. For example, classically, that word mituk, to the best of my knowledge at least, is used in the context of midat hadin, meaning divine judgment against us. The judgment is so meticulous and so strict that we need a mituk. And that mituk somehow reduces the destructive nature of din, of justice. For example, Gemara says, Yisurin is mematek es ha-din. You know, when we suffer, that causes mituk ha-din. And perhaps tshuva is mematek es adin, and so forth. There are various gemaras at the end of Yuma. Here we're talking about the powerful gust of wind, in this case from three different directions. And again, I don't know what the meteorologists say about this, but the northerly wind has that counterforce without which the world would not exist. But one thing is clear, that we've got winds coming from all directions on a daily basis. And then Rav adds another point. He says, "V'ruach dromis, Kasha Mikula. Well, until now we've been speaking about the power of the western wind and that force. Now we're talking about the southerly wind, and that's the most difficult of them all. And we understand now why it needs the northern wind to do the mituk. He says, "Ve'ilmole benetz." Now, please, I'm going to ask you not to ask me who this benetz is. It's some sort of a celestial being that looks a little bit like an eagle. Shema Amida. Again, this malach has a very powerful wings, and the wings are able to lift the winds. But if not for that malach, machreves es ha'olam, the southerly wind is so powerful that it would destroy the world. So we need this malach, this angel of God, to protect us from the power of the southerly wind. And the Gemara quotes a pasuk, Rav quotes a pasuk in Eov. You know, whenever you're quoting a pasuk in Eov about evil, you got to be a little nervous about it. And one of the chaverim of Eov turns to Eov and he says, "Hami binoscha ya'aver netz yifrosh knafav l'teimon." In other words, are you able to comprehend the effect or the agent, the agency of this netz, of this kind of a bird that spreads its wings l'teimon, meaning towards the south, in order to, in a sense, push back against the powerful winds that come from the south. And by the way, in the context of Eov, what that means is that Eov, stop complaining about divine justice. You know, as soon as you understand the universe and its mechanics, as soon as you can, you know, solve certain riddles about how the universe operates, then come back to me and complain. And many times the Reim, I don't know if they were the best friends or not, but the friends of Eov tell Eov, you don't have a clue about the mysteries of the universe. And by the way, I was on a Torah retreat this past Yontif Shavuos. I just came back yesterday, obviously. And one of the lecturers, had nothing to do with our sugya in Bava Basra, was addressing some of the issues that modern physics is dealing with. And again, from the very little I comprehended, it sounded like we know less about the mysteries of the universe than we know more about, you know. Any event, the bottom line of this statement of Rav is that the winds are coming from all directions, and when we say that Tedira Beruchos means that the western wind is the one we have to be very careful about because it's constant, it's perpetual, implying that the others are not, that's incorrect. That's an untenable position. Ella, says the Gemara, my, what does Rabbi Akiva mean by Tedira regarding the westerly wind? Tedira Bishchina. Now you may remember from Gemaras in Brachos about which direction we pray towards, that this issue about where the Shekhinah is, and the Shekhinah is coming from the west, and again we're going to have to see how this works, because the sun rises where? In the east, am I correct? And the Shekhinah is in the west. So what's happening is the sun is sort of tilting towards the Shekhinah. And we're going to have to see how that impacts on the laws of Tefillah, which is coming right around the bend. But suffice it to say that Tedira B'Shekhinah means that the Shekhinah is always in the west. Now, what does this have to do with our Gemara about our Chokas Nezikin. So look at Rashi. Rashi says, Tadira b'shchina b'marav hi shochenes. And that's all Rashi tells us, meaning that somehow the presence of Almighty God is on the west, and the, so how does that affect Harchaka? So the Nebuki Yosef in the back on the riff adds another word here, a very important word. He says, you don't want to set up a Bursaki that is located on that side where the Shekhinah is, because that's where the Kvod HaShekhinah is. Now, what direction do we face when we daven? Let's say in Canada.
East.
You face to the east. So, what it means in facing the east is...
If we were in India, we'd be facing west.
Oh. So, on this Gemara here, there's a classical commentary on Agadita called the Ben Yehoyada, and he says, "Vadai gam l'Rabbi Akiva asover sheshchina b'marav." Even Rabbi Akiva holds that the Shekhinah is in the west. Modehu, he agrees. Shakodesh Baruch Hu mole kol haaretz kvodo. God is everywhere. You know the song. Elish Sovir Shabitzad Marov on the west. Yesh Ar Shechina Begilui Yoser. Again, these are mystical concepts, but somehow, like we speak about the Mishkan and other examples, the Sneh, where the Shechina is somehow more revealed in a certain location than it is elsewhere. The same thing applies here. And the Gemara tells us that the neshama, the soul of a person, memalis is called, who fills the entire body. Nevertheless, the power of the neshama is felt in particular in the heart and in the nostrils. As the Torah says, kol asher nishmas ruach chayim bi'apo. Bi'apo. And there are long discussions about this concept, differentiating between one locale and another locale as far as Shekhinah is concerned. But again, we don't want to attach the Shekhinah to a place that's called a Makom HaTinofes, you know, a place where there's Tumah. We want to attach, you know, the Shekhinah to a Makom Tara, a Makom Kedosha. And therefore, we'll find also differences in Ashras HaShekhinah between a Tzaddik and Lahavdil a Rasha. You know, a Tzaddik has the Shekhinah radiates from his face, whereas in the case of a Rasha, you know, the Shekhinah is behest there. It's completely hidden. It's not revealed. And then, of course, we find that there are certain periods of time in history where the Shekhinah is more readily accessible than in other periods of time. All this indicates the concept of Shekhinah in a certain place, not to undermine our fundamental belief that God is everywhere. He's ever present. He's Mamale. He's Mama. Is Kol Haaretz Kula. The Rambam in his Pirush HaMishnayos suggests that Rabbi Akiva, when he says that Shekhinah is b'mayrav, the Shekhinah is in the west, he's referring to the Heichal in the Beis Hamikdash. The Heichal was situated in the western part of the Beis Hamikdash, and therefore any Bursaki that's situated on the west is in the same direction as the Heichal, and that's not proper covered for the Heichal. And once again, we're going to see in the laws of Tefillah that we direct ourselves towards the Heichal. The Meiri suggests that the intention here is to be marchik, to push away from the Jewish psyche any sort of worship of the sun. The sun rises in the east, and those who worship the sun would pray towards the east. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva would rather set up the Shekhinah in the opposite side, towards the west. But when we say that you can't set up a bursaki on the western side of the city because of the Shekhinah, what would be, as we discussed earlier, if there were two cities, one next to the other, and even if there's a distance between them, one of them is on the west relative to the other city. So therefore, as far as those who are located residing in the Ir HaMaravis, the western city, they would l'chora be allowed to set up a bursaki between them and the next city over, because that's on the eastern side of their city. But those who are sitting in the eastern city would be enjoined from setting up a bursaki in that place itself, even in the city itself, because that's on the west relative to the other city, because, and that's where the Shekhinah is. In other words, basically we don't understand, and the Mefarshim grapple with this whole situation. How is this possible? How do we implement these dinim? So in order to pick this up, we're going to have to learn the Tosis, the fourth Tosis down from the top. I'm not sure if we're going to have time to do this tonight. Let me just read another few lines of the Gemara just to create some sort of semi-closure to the sugya. And again, this, you know, we're opening up a whole Pandora's box here, not only in terms of the philosophy of Shekhinah B'Mara, but also in terms of the practical application of where to set up the bursaki. And then the Gemara quotes the Omer of Yeshua ben Levi, Bo v'nachzik tova lavoseinu. These are the Anshei Knesset Hagdola. We owe them a great of gratitude. Shehodiu, because they found the pasuk in Nach. I shouldn't say they found the pasuk in Nach. I should say they edited or authored a pasuk in Nach. Shehodiu, and they therefore revealed to us through that pasuk makom tefila, the direction to which we should be praying. Dichsiv, and the Gemara invokes a pasuk in Nehemiah, which we say every day in Shacharis, Utzva Shamayim Lecha Mishtachavim, and the celestial spheres to you bow. And that proves that the Shekhinah is in the west. Why is that so? Because the sun and the moon are on the eastern side, the Shekhinah is on the west, and it's not proper behavior for the Eved to bow very close to his Adon, meaning if the Shekhinah was on the east, it wouldn't make sense that he would bow, the Shemesh would bow in that direction. But rather, if the Shekhinah is all the way in the west, then the sun, in its, how shall I say, spherical, in its curvature, in the movement of setting towards the west, is bowing towards the Shekhinah. Okay, Rabbi Osei, we'll stop here.